The following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on April 6th, 2008, in Goloka Dham, Germany.
I'm a disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I'm regularly traveling all over the world to teach people how to turn on the unlimited bliss that's there within their hearts. Actually, each and every one of you have an ocean of unlimited bliss in your heart right now. And you simply have to learn how to tap into that ocean of unlimited bliss. In other words, if somebody wins the lottery, you know, and they win 10 trillion euros, I mean, the whole world would be amazed. Oh, he won 10 trillion euros. It's a huge jackpot, you see. But I have come today to teach you how to achieve a jackpot which makes 10 trillion euros look like pocket change. And that is called Krishna consciousness. So, why settle for something less than the best? Why not achieve the greatest thing? It's described in the Vishnu Purana. Jalajana valakshani stavada laksha vingshati krameya ruddha sankhya kya pakshinam dasha lakshanam trincha lakshani bhashyavaha chatur lakshani manushah. That this human form of life is a very rare thing. It's been achieved after transmigrating through 8 million different species of life. So here each of us are today sitting in this room in human body. You see? This is a very rare thing to be a human. If you consider, even in this room, all the little microbial germs floating around in the air, we are a minority population on this planet. The human beings are a very small percentage of the total living entities that make up the universe. So to be one of those living entities who has a human form, that's a very, very, very rare opportunity. So what is there's a saying in English, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. In other words, if you have a very good opportunity, don't blow it, don't waste it. So what opportunity do we have in this human form? You see? This is described in the Vedanta Sutra. You notice that I keep quoting different Vedic texts. That's because I'm not making up anything. I'm not giving my own flowery language to try to win admirers and followers, you see. I'm simply a humble servant of the Vedic wisdom, that's all. The Vedic wisdom is already perfect. I don't need to add anything to it or subtract anything from it. I'm simply presenting the Vedic wisdom as I have heard it from my beloved spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, according to the Vedanta Sutra, it's very clearly stated, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now you've got a human body. You are meant to do what with it? Inquire into the Absolute Truth. Now some people argue, well, that's an absurd thing because everybody knows there is no Absolute Truth. Some people argue like that. But we have to ask them, are you absolutely sure? In other words, you cannot say absolutely there's no absolute truth because you just contradicted yourself. So, the non-existence of the absolute truth is illogical, in other words. Therefore, there must be an absolute truth. Now, the process of elimination, by cutting off the absurd, that there must be an absolute truth. So, a human being has the propensity to inquire what is the absolute truth. This plant, you see, it will not ask what is the absolute truth. It has no ability to do that. Or a dog or a cow, you see. They cannot inquire. But a human being, he can ask such questions. He can ask, where have I come from? Who am I? What is my purpose in life? What is the absolute truth? Where is my destiny? How can I achieve it? This human life is meant for thoughtfulness. We see throughout history there have been so many great philosophers who've asked these kind of questions. You see. So we are meant to be philosophical in this life, not to just go through, you know, eating, sleeping, you know, making money, spending money, you know. It's a dog life. We are actually meant to inquire, what is my purpose for existence? And the good news is, if you're really serious, if you really want to find out what the absolute truth is, the absolute truth, personality, supreme person, absolute truth, is actually situated within you. And when he knows that you're really serious to find out the absolute truth, he'll bring you in contact with a person who will turn you on to the absolute truth. He'll actually bring you the supreme person within you, the supreme absolute truth person within you, will bring you in touch with a person externally who can then make the connections, you see. That's what happened to me. I was looking for the absolute truth. And I remember my freshman, as a kid going to high school, my parents, my dad always said, son, your college days are going to be the happiest days of your life. And I was thinking, okay, look forward to college. You know, I'm not very happy in high school, but when I get to college, it's going to be great. Because dad said it would be great, and he went through college, so he must know. But I got there, and guess what? It was miserable. I went, oh my God, if this is the best time of my life, then what is my life going to be like? So I began pondering, what's the purpose of existence? I wanted to know. And we were taking different courses at the university. There was one course that everybody was required to take. And this was an interesting course. This was a small liberal arts school. And they devised this course, which was an interdepartmental course. The history people came in. It was different lecture each week. History would come in, then architecture, and then, you know, literature. It was the whole history of Western civilization taught from the perspective of all the different departments in the college. It was an interesting course. Basic studies, but of course it was the abbreviation was BS. When, you know, Wolf's stool. We all had a big laugh over that. BS 101, BS 102. But anyway, we were being exposed to all of this philosophy of the Western culture. This thinker, that thinker, Marcus Aurelius, Plato, so many thinkers we were exposed to. Descartes, you know, Buber, so many of these big philosophers we were exposed to. And not one of them could give a reasonable explanation that made any sense. Not one of them could explain what is the purpose of existence that made sense to me. Not one of them. So I was looking. I got to find out, why do I exist? You see? Why am I here? What is the purpose of my being here? You know, they told me, make good grades in school, so you can get a good job, you get a nice wife, you get a house, get some kids. For what purpose? You just die, that's all, and get buried under the ground. What is the purpose of working so hard, making good grades, getting a good job, getting a beautiful wife, having beautiful kids, for simply dying? You see? It didn't make sense to me. It just didn't make sense. The whole basis of the culture in which I grew up, the American culture, same thing in Europe, it didn't make sense to me. It didn't have it wasn't reasonable. I really wanted to know, what's the purpose of my existence? So my quest went on and on and on and on and on, and finally it led me to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, who answered everything perfectly, so wonderfully. And the beauty of the answers that Prabhupada has given is that even now it's been 37 years I've been studying and teaching and practicing what Prabhupada has given. And I can tell you, it just gets better and better and better. It's like it becomes brighter and clearer, more ecstatic. This is definitely the real thing. What Prabhupada is revealing is the real thing. It's not simply another hype of another slick guru. This is the real thing. I can tell you that Krishna consciousness is the real thing because it works. Sometimes people ask, well, how do you know the truth? It's actually very simple. In two words you can answer it. Truth works. You see, untruth doesn't work. It may appear to work for some time. You see, but in the long run, untruth doesn't work. It malfunctions after a while. You see. But if you actually find the real truth, you see, that works. That's effective. It's powerful. It carries one forward step by step by step by step and further and on and on and on. And it never fails. You see, that's true. And I can tell you, after all, I tried so many things. I tried this teaching, that guru, this thing, that thing. So many things I tried. And I could see nothing really had the substance. Nothing really had the substance. But when I found these teachings of Srila Prabhupada, I found something that was really sublime. I found something that really works and keeps working better. The more you work at it, the better it gets. And it just doesn't stop. In fact, it's what Prabhupada is, he's not making up also what he has stated. He is simply bringing what's there in the Vedic wisdom. He is bringing the pure teachings of the Vedas in the most powerful way that it's ever been presented, actually. And no one has been able to present the Vedic knowledge, the Vedic system of enlightenment, in such a powerful, effective, and dynamic way as His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Others present, but Prabhupada, no one has been able to present as Prabhupada did because of the caliber of his realization, the caliber of his consciousness, the caliber of his character is unparalleled. You see? So, taking advantage of this knowledge given by Srila Prabhupada, one can make one's life inconceivably sublime. Whatever anxieties we may be feeling, whatever confusion, illusion, delusion, whatever negative energy may be there, it can all be overcome. Every bit of it can be overcome. You can develop so much positive energy that we can actually transform the whole world. You see? Why just transform one's own consciousness? Prabhupada is giving a formula that if you follow it carefully, you will transform yourself and you will have the potency to transform the whole planet. You see? This is what is needed. We have a planet right now that's going down the tubes, which is going down into ruination. The whole social fabric is disintegrating, gradually disintegrating. Just like the poet Yeats, he wrote a nice poetry one time. He said, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. So that's the actual situation we see in this planet today. Environmentally, sociologically, in every sphere, the society is disintegrating. Gradually disintegrating. So what this planet needs and what each and every one of us needs, very strongly needs right now, is a very powerful spiritual energy to transform our consciousness, to bring us back to our actual identity as an eternal spiritual being, and to manifest that energy in the human society to save it from becoming more and more dismantled. As many of you probably are very familiar, the understanding, the basic understanding coming from the Vedic wisdom is that we're not the body. It's not me. I'm not male. I'm not female. I'm not American. I'm not German. I'm not white. I'm not black. I'm none of these things. It's the garment. So herein lies the root problem of our modern day society. Everyone thinks they're the body. Everyone's trying to get their enjoyment combining the body with the objects of the senses. Just like, for example, if you gave me a nice big bowl of strawberry ice cream, the organic ice cream, organic strawberry. And I just dip my chatter into it. Would I get any pleasure? Would there be any enjoyment in dipping my chatter in a bowl of strawberry ice cream? No. You want to enjoy? Put it in your mouth. Put that ice cream in your mouth. Then you'll get enjoyment. So what are we doing in our modern society? We're simply dipping the chatter in the ice cream. We're simply taking our senses, which are external. They are chatter only. They are not us. We are taking our senses and we are matching them up with the objects of the senses. We take our genitals and match it up with some genital. We take our tongue and match it up with this. We match up all of our senses, different objects of the senses. And think, oh yes, now I'm enjoying it. But it's simply dipping and chattering. It's not us. The body is simply a covering. It's a garment. It's not the real self. So if you want actual enjoyment, put the ice cream in your mouth. That's our Krishna consciousness. You want real enjoyment, put the ice cream in your mouth. In other words, let you, the actual living being, come in contact with that which will give you unlimited enjoyment. That's the real message of your thing. Let you, the real living entity who is seeking unlimited happiness, come into contact, direct contact, with that which will give you unlimited happiness. And that is Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. You see, we're in the middle of a huge field of energy. We're existing now in the middle of a huge energy field. And we are also energy. But what does energy mean? It's like here on above Srila Prabhupada, there is the electric light. And on the altar also the electric light is there. And this powering this microphone, there is electricity. So what does this energy mean? There's so much electrical energy available around. So many people have electrical energy. Everywhere we see electrical energy. So what does it mean? What is the logical conclusion of so much electrical energy? It means there's a powerhouse generating that energy. So some people say, it's all energy. That's their philosophy. It's all energy. But energy means somewhere there must be a powerhouse. You understand? Somewhere there must be a powerhouse. Otherwise, how all this energy is coming? So, if you want to get really energized, and connect with that powerhouse, that is called Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means when you become directly connected with the powerhouse. That is Krishna consciousness. So when you become actually Krishna conscious, you are energized. You become unlimitedly energized, actually. So that is what we are teaching. We are teaching people how to become fully, totally energized. Why be dead in this material world? In this material world, when they come out as little children, they have so much energy, isn't it? But then because they're identified with the body and because the body gradually deteriorates and people gradually lose their energy. We see old people all humped over, depressed, you see. That's a common thing. Because they're identifying with the body, that energy that he had as a youth, it just gradually keeps fading away, fading away, fading away, fading away. But that is a shame. It's a crying shame that people should have to go through that. It just means they haven't been trained properly. They're thinking that they're the body. It's a shame. It's really a shame. It's actually disgusting, if I can say that without being offensive to all the leaders of the society. It's disgusting. The people are not, the leaders themselves don't know the identity of the self. And the teaching that's being done, they're teaching people simply in terms of bodily identification. So something has to be done about this. The whole world is suffering because people are misidentifying with their material bodies. Something has to be done. So that's why I'm traveling all over the world. We're trying to bring about a revolution on this planet. Because people are being cheated by leaders who are teaching them to identify with their material bodies. We're trying to wake people up and say, you're not the body. You're an eternal spiritual being in quality one with that energetic powerhouse that's giving all the energy for the whole universe. You're qualitatively one with that powerhouse. So then the question is, all right, how do you get energized then? What's the connecting process? In Sanskrit language, the word is yoga. And in English, I think in German also, yok. The ox and the bull, and same thing in German, yok. Yes. English and German. Of course, a lot of English comes from German anyway. A lot of our English words are your German words. We just borrowed them. That's all. So, that word yok in English and German, same word. It comes from the Sanskrit word yoga. And what does yoga mean? It means connect with the supreme powerhouse, supreme person. That is yoga. So there are different types of yoga, just like there is the pranayama yoga, where they do the, you know, breathing in and out. There's the pranayama, the prana air, there's the apana air. The prana air moves up, the apana air moves down. The pranayama yogis try to neutralize these two airs. That's called puttaka, a state of neutralizing the apana and the prana airs. And then there's another, even then it gets really intense when you get to kambhaka yoga. Kambhaka yogis, what they do is they offer the exhalation into the inhalation and completely stop their breathing. This is a very highly advanced technique. I don't recommend you try this unless you have an expert kambhaka yogi who can train you how to do it. You may have some serious health problem, but they actually stop breathing altogether by merging the outgoing breath into the incoming breath. They totally stop breathing. But these sort of techniques are very difficult, and you really can't hold a 9-to-5 job while you're holding your breath, you see. So we need a yoga which is more practical. You can't really drive down the highway while you're holding your breath, merging your inhalation into your exhalation, you see. It's pretty difficult. So what is needed in this age is a type of yoga that's very practical, that you can cover your basic needs. You see, you can earn your job, you can have a family, you know, you can have a wife, you can have a husband, you can have kids. You can carry on a, quote, ordinary life, unquote, and at the same time become a highly advanced yogi, or one who is connected with that supreme person, ultimate powerhouse of everything that exists. That system is described here in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 6, text number 47. Yoginam api sarvesham mangatena taratmana shadhavan vajate yomang samayuktatamo mataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. So here the Supreme Person himself is explaining, if you want to connect with me, if you want to get that energization, see, then here's how you do it. You do it through love, you see. And it's quite logical if you think about it. You see. If you try to mechanically fix your mind on something, just like, let's say you're trying to mechanically fix your mind on my lecture right now. You don't have any feeling for it, but you're just trying to, you're told, oh, there's some discourse, so just fix your mind on it. But then, you know, if there's no feeling, then it's difficult. to mechanically fix your mind. It's like sometimes we nod out and we're hearing a lecture, we start going, because we're not feeling. We're just trying to mechanically fix the mind in a lecture. But if you're loving it, if the topic is, you love the topic, you see, it's exciting for you. It's thrilling for you because you love it. Then, it's not difficult. You're on sitting on the edge of your chair. Of course, we don't have chairs here, but you know what I mean. You're like, really? Wow. I don't want to miss a word of this. You see? So, in the same way, the yogis, they try to fix their mind on one point. I know I took some yoga home study course one time, and I was told to fix my mind on a candle. Sit and stare at a candle. So I tried that. I want to become self-realized. So I did that. I lit the candle and I sat there and I stared at it. And then when some friend knocked on the door, and they got scared when they looked at me. They thought I was. They got really scared just seeing me in that state of being, a candle starer. I didn't find that it really did anything for me except scare away my friends. And finally, I took a candle and I burned all the lessons because I found it didn't work for me. But then I found Srila Prabhupada teaching a system where instead of just mechanically fixing your mind on some object like a candle flame, something like that, just mechanically, you actually fall in love with your object of meditation. You bring in a beautiful person, the most beautiful, charming, powerful, attractive, wealthy, intelligent, famous, renowned person in the history of existence, and you meditate on him. And the meditation even allows you to associate with him if you reach a certain level, where you can talk with him, you can dance with him, etc. It's a very high level type of meditation. That's called Krishna consciousness. Where you actually have an object of meditation which is lovable. The most beautiful person, you see. Just like if we see a beautiful girl or a beautiful man, a girl sees a beautiful boy or a boy sees a beautiful girl, someone says, now you have to meditate on her. You have to meditate on that beautiful girl or that beautiful boy. You say, no, I don't. No, it just happens. Oh, there's a beautiful girl. A young boy, when he sees a beautiful girl, he just can't take his eyes off of her. It's a natural thing. It's a natural attraction. Boy and girl, they naturally attract. You see. There's a natural loving attraction there. So, in the same way, the bhakti yogi, he falls in love with God. God becomes more attractive even than the most beautiful member of the opposite sex for him. You see. Krishna becomes a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful, attractive, exciting, thrilling, lovable person that I can have a relationship with. So in this way, the bhakti yoga system is more powerful. Because when you love someone, when you fall in love with someone, you can't do anything but think about them 24 hours a day. And you wake up in the morning, how is my girlfriend today? What's she doing today? You see? Maybe I can, there's a flower. Maybe I can pick the flower. As soon as you see a flower, you immediately think of your girlfriend. I can offer this flower to my girlfriend. So when you're in love, you're always thinking of your girlfriend or a boyfriend, If you're a girl, you're thinking of your boyfriend. Of course, nowadays they want to have, some boys want to have boyfriends. You got the point though. I'm just trying to make a point here about the natural attraction, which is there. So, that natural attraction is there, dormant within the heart of each of us for the Supreme Person. We all have that attraction for the Supreme Person within us. A very powerful, powerful attraction for the Supreme Person is right there, right now, in your heart. Very powerful attraction. For the Supreme Person is right now, right there within your heart. It is simply covered. It is simply covered by layers upon layers upon layers of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. So Krishna consciousness is a cleansing process of the consciousness, which gradually cleanses away the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, the illusion, and the envy. So the original pure enlightened state called Krishna consciousness becomes revived. So in other words, we are not trying to impose anything on you. Okay, we're going to lay this thing on you called Krishna consciousness. No. We're not trying to lay anything on you, impose something on you. All we're doing is saying, oh, we want to help you get free from all the things that have been imposed upon you by the material society, which have taken away your natural, original, enlightened state of consciousness. That's all we really want to do. We just want to help you get free of all this this dirt which is clouding your consciousness, so you can come back to your original, pure, natural state of consciousness. You can call it Krishna consciousness. You can say Christ consciousness, Jehovah, Buddha consciousness. Those can also be described by those terms. The original pure state, Krishna consciousness, we're simply wanting to teach you how to attain that state of consciousness. And that's why I've come here today. I want to help you achieve that state of unlimited happiness, unlimited bliss, unlimited love, which you have right now, but you've lost touch with it. I've come here today to help you reconnect with yourself. I've come here today to help you know who you are and help you be who you are. That's all. I haven't come to ask you to join a cult. I've asked you to quit all the cults of this material existence and come back to your original, natural, pure state of consciousness. That's my mission. So I'm so happy that you've so nicely hearing today. You've come today to hear. I'm so happy. I have to thank each and every one of you for coming. And I can ask now if there's any questions. You should speak loudly because I am hard of hearing. Is there any questions? Yes. People are being helplessly tossed by the modes, that's fair. So what's the question? How to get free? Right. You're asking how does one do it when he's deeply entangled? Is that your ask? Yes. It's simply a matter of desire. It's simply a matter of your desire. Krishna controls everything. Krishna is not a blade of grass moves without his will. So even one may be in a situation where it's next to impossible to become Krishna conscious. Family situation, job situation, you know. You may say, well, I'm in a situation where it's just really impossible for me to do it. All my entanglements, the things I'm associated with just to maintain my livelihood, it's not possible. One may argue like that. But the fact is that if you actually desire, you're sincerely begging, my dear Lord Krishna, I want out of this entanglement, I want to become your pure devotee, please help me. Krishna has been watching and waiting for millions of lifetimes, as you have, that person has been in the cycle of birth and death, waiting for that day when they will sincerely beg for bhakti. For millions of lifetimes, he's been waiting for that day when they will sincerely call out for to be blessed with bhakti. So do you think Krishna will ignore? their sincere prayer? Krishna, who controls everything, can easily make the arrangements. You see, it's his maya. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunani rakonteya jagadvi parivartate. Daivi hiyesha gunamayi mama maya dirachiya mameva ye prapajante mayam metam tarantite. Krishna says, this divine energy of mine, talking about the material energy, this divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome. But one who is surrendered, for one who is surrendered unto me, he can easily cross beyond it. So all you have to do is say, all you have to do is go in front of the deities and bow down and say, my dear Lord, I now surrender unto you. Take control of me. If you do that with sincerity, Krishna will call off his material nature. It's that simple, Prabhu. All you have to do is sincerely say, my dear Lord Krishna, I now surrender unto you. Please take control of me. I belong to you. If you do that, you will call off the material energy. You'll be amazed at how the whole world changes within a second. All you have to do is bow down, fall flat on the ground and pray to Krishna, my dear Lord, now I fully surrender myself unto you for all of eternity. You take control of me. I'm now your puppet. You pull the strings. And you'll be amazed how the material energy backs off. The material modes of nature back off. They leave you alone. They don't touch you anymore. This is Krishna's man now. Maya will say, this man, I've been controlling this living being for millions of lifetimes, but now I can't touch him anymore because he's submitting to Krishna. All you have to do is bow down before Krishna sincerely, intensely, with the greatest intensity within your heart that you can pray. My dear Lord, now I surrender unto you for all of eternity. You please take complete control of me. I have nothing to do except serve you. And that's it. You do that, you'll be amazed. And the tail energy backs off. But are you willing to pray that way? Are you willing to take a chance and gamble your future? You see, are you willing to actually pray that way? That's up to you now. No one's going to force you. Yes, that's why he can easily call it off, you see. Just like there's the police department and there's the king, you see. If you're in trouble with the police, but the king gives you a pardon, then there's no problem. The king can call off his policeman. The police have come to arrest you. But if the king says, no, it's all right, let him go, then you're free. Because the police are under the king's control. You understand? You just have to get on the good side of the king. And all you have to do is say, my dear Lord Krishna, I'm now your man. You do with me as you like. I'm your servant. Just sincerely pray that way with all your heart. And if the first time it doesn't work, just keep praying that way. In fact, we have a special mantra that will help you to do that. This mantra means, my dear Lord Krishna, now I'm your man. I'm surrendering to you. You have to chant that mantra every day. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. If it doesn't work the first day, keep chanting. Dedicate yourself to calling out with a mood of complete surrender to the Lord, Hare Krishna mantra, and do it every day on a regulated basis. You have beads? You chant on the beads? You chant on the fingers? Well, you know, if you follow the actual system given by the acharyas, that's good, you're chanting. I'm very happy to hear that. But I can tell you it will become more potent if you get the japa bead, because that is the way of the acharyas. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. When you want to go from here to Heidelberg, you can try going over the hills or you can try getting on the paved road, you see. Well, it'll be easier. You try to blaze your own trail through the forest, you may have a tougher time of getting to Heidelberg, you see. If you take the established road, it'll be much easier. So the established road is japa mala beads. Take the established way given by the great acharyas, given by Srila Prabhupada, given by Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, given by Rupa Goswami, given by Lord Chaitanya. Take the standard way given by these great acharyas instead of thinking, well, I'm going to do it my own way. See, our disease is we want to do it our own way. And even when we come to Krishna consciousness, we want to do it, I'll do it my way. But that's part of the problem. We want to do it my way instead of Krishna's way. That's what holds us back. That's what keeps us in the grip of Maya. Even when we're practicing Krishna consciousness, we're thinking, well, no, but I will do it my way. Then Maya is able to keep her grip on us because of them. You say, no, the heck with my way. I've been doing it for millions of lifetimes. Where has it gotten me? Now let me totally give you up doing it my way, and I'm just going to do whatever Krishna wants. Completely surrender. So actually, Krishna wants us to chant on the beads. Prabhupada said, chant round the beads. So get some japa beads. And chant every day. Call out to the Lord with sincere yearning of the heart, my dear Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And you'll be amazed at how the modes of nature just say, okay, this one doesn't belong to us anymore. We're going to leave him alone. And you'll be so happy you can't believe how much nectar you will taste every minute. And that nectar will get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter year after year, decade after decade. You'll be amazed. This process works. I know. I've been doing it for 37 years. If you do the same thing that I've been doing, you'll taste so much nectar, you won't believe how much nectar you get. Okay? Any other questions yet? Right. So you're on the Titanic and the boat's sinking, but there's one last dance going on in the ballroom. And so you got one foot in the lifeboat and the other on the ship. Right? So you have to become intelligent. That's all. Human life is meant for intelligence. You have to be intelligent. What is the result of these of my lack of desire? You have to analyze it very intelligently. That is called brahmana. One who can intelligently analyze things very with a clear head. You have to scientifically study the reality that you are in and very carefully see what's true and what's untrue. And I guarantee you, if you do that, especially if you do it under the guidance of an enlightened person who is much more realized than you are, that your desires will become strongly, in fact, gradually, completely, that you should surrender to Krishna. It's just a matter of intelligent analysis. You know, the dance, and is it the lifeboat or is it another dance in the ballroom? In the beginning, I think the ship has at least another hour. They're saying the ship has another hour, so I could be okay to go for one last dance. I even heard that the band played a song as the ship was sinking. There's different stories. But the captain went down with the ship. But anyway, there wasn't enough boats for everybody. They didn't have enough lifeboats for everyone. And the first lifeboat, which could have held 65 people, only 12 people went in that lifeboat. That means 40 people died because of the people were in too much of a rush to head out in the first lifeboat. 40 people who could have lived actually died. But anyway, you should be thinking, well, I'm desiring the last dance in the ballroom. I'm also desiring the lifeboat. So which way should I go right now? One more dance in the ballroom or on the lifeboat? You need to become very thoughtful, my dear sir, to understand what is the reality. You may think, well, it's not so important now because after all, I'm still relatively young and, you know, I'm going to live a long time. I can take my time. But what is, do you know that verse? Mahabharata, Vanaparva, chapter 313, text 116. You know that verse? In that verse, Maharaj, Yamaraj has inquired from Maharaj Yudhisthira, what is the most wonderful thing in this world? And Maharaj Yudhisthira very intelligently says, Ahani ahani bhuchani ganchanti yamalayam shesha stavram ichchami kim maschayamatahapanam. At every moment, countless numbers of living beings are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj. But those who are remaining are thinking, I have no problem. I'm going to be here for a long time. Yudhisthira Maharaj said, Kim mashcharyatahapparam. What can be more wonderful than this? This is the most amazing thing. So, we don't have a strong desire to become self-realized because we think we're going to live a long time. But if you knew that you had 5 minutes, see, if Al-Qaeda came in, they said, we don't like Hindus. You people must be Hindus because you're here with Krishna. So you have 5 minutes. We're going to blow you all away. You know, time for the firing squad. You know, we're going to assassinate all of you. They come in here with their machine guns and say, okay, that's it. You got 5 minutes. Now, do you think you'd become interested in self-realization then? You might get serious about surrendering to Krishna then? So, can you be sure you have even 5 minutes from right now? Can you guarantee me you're going to live for 60 more seconds? No, you cannot. So, you just have to have the proper understanding of the reality. Don't be carried away by all the rosy billboards on the highway, you see. And all the TV shows and the movies and all the hype that's going around about enjoying. I can tell you it's simply hype. It's simply hype. Yes. We hear this many times. We've had experience in our movement, actually, in ISKCON. It's a long history. Many people come. They take it up for a while because they get some relief from the material suffering, but then they don't. Somehow or other, they lose the taste after a while, you see, and they go away. Isn't it a very common thing? So there's something wrong with the process. There's something wrong with where they practiced it. Which is it? Something was wrong with the process? Is it the process that was wrong? Or they were doing something wrong? What do you say, Susan? They were doing something wrong. That's right. That's right. So what are we doing wrong that doesn't give us the taste? That's what we have to find out, you see. I can tell you that it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita. There are different positions, you see. There's three types of happiness mentioned, and we can add the fourth one. Happiness in the mode of ignorance, which is miserable in the beginning and miserable in the end. There's happiness in the mode of passion, which is nectarian in the beginning and miserable in the end. There's happiness in the mode of goodness, which is poison in the beginning and nectar at the end. And the fourth one is transcendental happiness, which is nectar in the beginning and nectar in the end. So if someone is not getting a taste, what does it mean? If they had a taste in the beginning and they lost the taste, what does it mean about their practice of Krishna consciousness? It was rajasic. You understand? If something is sweet in the beginning and then it gradually loses its taste, it means that it was in the mode of very strong influence of the Rajagun. Their practice of Krishna bhakti was rajasic. It's nice they are practicing, they got some benefit, but if the taste didn't come, it had some initial taste and the taste faded away, that's a symptom of happiness in the mode of passion. So the thing is, we have to learn how to practice bhakti, at least sattvically and ideally pseudo-sattvically. Because in either position, you're going to get ever-increasing taste. You won't feel there's no taste, you'll actually be getting taste. Now I have this, I'm on the internet, I have an e-course which is very popular. I got almost 8,000 people signed up for it all over the world. And a question I get very common from my readers is this. They say, I'm chanting, but I don't get any taste. How can I get taste from my chanting? And the answer is quite simple. Instead of trying to get taste from your chanting, I want to derive something for the name, for my enjoyment, you see. That's not the right approach. You should be thinking, how can I chant in such a way that I can give taste to Krishna? How can I give pleasure to Krishna when I chant his name? You see? Stop being selfish. And that's the point. If you want to actually get the taste, and I'm in favor of that, you should want it. We promote that. But you have to understand the way to get the taste. The way to get the taste is to stop trying to get it. Try to give it to Krishna. Try to give Krishna some taste from your chanting, that he can relish your chanting. You see? Try to give taste to Krishna by the way you chant, and then you'll get unlimited taste. See, the more you give taste to Krishna, then you will get taste. Let him relish your chanting. Let him taste some sweet nectar when he hears your chanting. You understand? This is the secret of success. Most devotees, I don't think, don't know this, or many devotees don't know this. They keep trying, I got to get the taste, I got to get the taste, I got to. They don't know. They're going about it the wrong way. You see, you have to try to give taste to Krishna. And then, wow, you get unlimited taste. It's one of those insider secrets. I'm trying to spread it all over this country. You see. So everybody will get taste. And everybody will stay, and everybody will tell their friends, their neighbors, and we can make a revolution that the whole planet can become Krishna conscious. There's no reason why we can't do it. We just read this morning in the Bhagavatam that nothing is impossible for one who has surrendered to Krishna. There's nothing impossible because Krishna's mercy is there. There's nothing is impossible. So I think we should try to revolutionize our hearts and try to revolutionize the whole planet. I think we should do that. That's my suggestion. Revolutionize your heart and let's work together to make a revolution on this planet that the whole world can become peaceful and happy. All the problems will be history. No more anxiety about global warming, about nuclear war, about Al-Qaeda, this thing, that thing. All these anxieties can just be something in the history books, the Vaishnava history books. For 10,000 years, we can have a golden Satya Yuga on this planet. It's predicted it will happen by Krishna Das Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now let's make it happen. Let's become pure devotees and make a revolution on this planet. See, that's my humble request. Question? Therefore, we have to educate people. We have to have a program to give everyone intelligence. That's all. We have to have a very dynamic, attractive program going on all over the globe. That's what I'm doing with my e-course. I'm trying to give trying to create an educational system that thousands and millions of people can get educated and get intelligent. You see? You see, that's... It's simply, yeah, it's a fact. But with education, one can develop intelligence. Even a dull-headed fool, if he's educated properly by a qualified Brahmin Vaishnava, even a dull-headed fool can become a Vaishnava. You see. How did Prabhupada get us? Yes. Thank you. Yes, there are three types of... Actually, Prabhupada says, it's interesting the way he says it. He says there's three types of pure devotees. There's a Kanishta pure devotee, a Majjhima, and an Uttama. He says a spiritual master can be from either of those three groups. But he says that one should be careful. The disciple should take care to find a guru who's actually Uttama. Prabhupada says like that. So, then we can study what actually are the differences between an Uttama, a Majjhima, and a Kanishta. Prabhupada also answers the details of the differences of what they are. In other words, we should take Prabhupada's definition for what is the difference between a Kanishta, a Majjhima, and an Uttama. Kanishta, he simply worships the deities. He has no respect for Vaishnavas. He's not a very qualified person to guide him. The Majjhima Adhikari, as Prabhupada describes him, he is very respectful to Vaishnavas. He worships the Supreme Lord. He's very merciful upon the non-devotees, and those who are completely blasphemous, he avoids them. He also has very strong faith in the Vaishnava principles, but in terms of philosophy, he's not able to defeat all opposing arguments. He's weak philosophically. But the Prabhupada explains the Uttama Adhikari, not only does he have the strong faith, but also he's very powerful in philosophical argument. He can defeat all opposing arguments. And he's fully dedicated to... He's totally 100% dedicated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for delivering the fallen condition of souls. Prabhupada defines the Uttama Adhikari like that. That is one of his definitions for Uttama Adhikari. So such a person, according to Prabhupada's teachings, is qualified to deliver us back to home, back to Godhead. Who has not only the strong faith, but is very, very expert in the philosophy. Who can totally smash all opposing arguments against the Vaishnava Siddhanta and is totally absorbed 24 hours a day in pushing for this movement. Such a person is considered an Uttama Adhikari and is very qualified to take us out of this mess called the material world. Any other questions? So everybody's happy now. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, if you want me to hear, I'm very, very hard of hearing. So you got to. Would she would like to give? Yes. You give your example. We would like to hear. Yes, I like that example because Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness is the switch that turns on the whole world. You see. Right now, the whole world is turned off. You ever been in a room? I know when I'm traveling, this is a problem I have. You know, I wake up in some room I've never slept in. It's completely dark. And I have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. I'm looking for a light switch somewhere. I'm groping along the wall. Where is that light switch? You see? But if you actually know where the light switch is, then you have no problem. If you don't know where the light switch is, then you have problems. But when you know that switch is, and you flip it on, and then everything, all the problems are solved. So Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, is a switch. It's in the nectar devotion. It's that switch, and you flip it on, the whole world becomes brilliant. So I like the example of the TV. And another example is, actually, you have a TV in your heart. Prabhupada describes there's a mystic television in the heart of every living being, you see. And Krishna's pastimes are going on right now in your heart. you actually have access to see Krishna's Leela, not a video, but live. You have access to see Krishna's pastimes going on in your heart right now. You just have to flip the switch of pure bhakti. And then you can actually, you know, once you get it tuned in completely, you can actually see Krishna's pastimes going on within you. And to take it even a step further, you can actually jump out of your position of watching them and be a participant in them. That's the ultimate position. You see, you can turn on the TV and jump into it and be a part of, you know, as a gopi, a gopa, a flute, a butterfly, a rock. Even the rocks are, actually in the spiritual world, Prabhupada explains that every single living entity is a human being. But they take different forms to play different roles in the pastime. Just like Kalindi is a beautiful goddess, but she takes the form of River Jamuna. She's a female, a beautiful woman, you see. But she takes the form of a river to serve Krishna in that way. So everything in the spiritual world is actually a human being, but they take these different forms, like a rock, you know, where Krishna takes his lunch every day. You see, that's actually a human being, but he assumes the form of a rock because he loves to let Krishna sit on him every day. He loves it. He's in total bliss. Krishna gets to sit on me every day. You see, so you can actually revive your original. By this process, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, you can actually revive your original rasa in the spiritual world with Krishna. You see, it all starts by turning on the television set. And gradually, you become more and more purified, more and more purified. You go through all the different steps. You finally come all the way to Krishna Prema, and then you can actually re-enter into your eternal rasa with Krishna. So it all begins with chanting good rounds, with following the regulated principles, taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. You see, the basic items given by Rupa Goswami, you see. The first step is Adau Gurashvayam. The very first step is take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the first step. And then, under his expert guidance, gradually, you regain your original identity in Krishna's pastime. And you don't kick your guru away then, saying, okay, Gurudev, I don't need you anymore. Hari Bol, get out of here. No. Even in your enlightened state, you'll always be the worshipful disciple of your spiritual master. I can't wait to see Prabhupada in Goloka Vrindavan. And the beautiful thing is that there's full freedom in the spiritual world. That means when we go back to Godhead, if we want to see Prabhupada as we saw him here, he will mercifully do that for us. If we want to see Prabhupada at Tompkins Square Park, Prabhupada can display those leelas even in the spiritual world for us. All the leelas can be re-experienced. There's full freedom in the spiritual world. There's no limit to how sweet and how wonderful it can be there. So, you really want to know what it's like, you got to flip on the TV and stay tuned in. Actually, I used to have a TV show in the U.S. It was a weekly show. I used to produce it. I'm too busy now. I don't have enough time. But it was called Turn On Your Soul. And our theme song was we had a theme song for the show. It was we would say. Do you know who you really are? Do you know who you really are? Do you know where you're coming from? Do you know where it is that you're going? Or what you will become? You're eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So remember and celebrate this. You're not of this world, dear friends. Better tune in and turn on your soul. That was the first verse. I'm also giving you the second verse too. Do you know what happens when you die? Do you know what's beyond the sky? Do you think that body is you? It's just something that you're passing through. You're eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So remember and celebrate this. You're not of this world, dear friend. Better tune in and turn on your soul. And then there was a bridge. We're told that everything happens by chance. Boom, 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 boom. And the universe has no person in control. Dun, 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 dun. But I see that every machine has got an operator. So the universe also has one. This I know. Do you know who you really are? Do you know where you're coming from? Do you know where it is that you're going? Or what you will become? You're eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So remember and celebrate this. You're not of this world, dear friend. Better tune in and turn on your soul. Yes, you're not of this world, dear friend. Better tune in and turn on your soul. Yes. I don't follow, what is it?
I read it in a letter that Prabhupada said that they're not only eternal, the Buddhist, the spiritual sky. Yeah? They're not only eternal, the Buddhist, the spiritual, but they're also eternal, the Buddhist, and the children, like Arjuna. Now, we're not part of this world, probably.
Well, Prabhupada explains that some devotees remain here eternally, like Arjuna. Yes. But he also explains that a devotee can be in both worlds simultaneously. Prahlad Maharaj is an example the Prabhupada gives. A pure devotee can actually manifest simultaneously in both the material and the spiritual world. Both places at the same time. So there's a lot, there's full freedom in self-realization. So, if you really want to find out what it's like, then we have to become pure devotees. That's all there is to it. We have to take these wonderful instructions that Prabhupada has given us and perfect them. Become perfect followers of the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and then there's unlimited, amazing miracles that we will experience every day for all of eternity. Any other questions? Got to tune in and turn on yourself. And that switch is the Hare Krishna mantra. So everyone's happy now? Everyone's ready to become a pure devotee? Get out of this rotten material existence? And revolutionize the planet on the way out? Let's do it. Let's revolutionize our hearts and revolutionize the whole world, you see. Actually, Germany is a very powerful country, we've seen historically. If the German people want to do something, they're very powerful people. So now you become powerful in Krishna consciousness, you see. The German people are very powerful. You're very powerful people, very powerful, strong nation, we've seen historically. Your German history, a very powerful nation. So now become strong in Krishna consciousness and utilize that German power, you see, to make the whole world Krishna conscious. So I guess our time is up. I've been going for an hour and 20 minutes. So is there any other questions? Anyone else want to bring some points forward? Now, by the way, if you want to check out my e-course, I'll leave my cards here. Just go to www.backtohome.com and you can sign up for free. Get something that's written fresh every day in your e-box. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.